Welcome to another weekend bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. E3 was last week, not even this past week, but I did want to get a debrief on what went on there, so I had to wait for everyone to get back from E3, and Brian Heater of TechCrunch is here today to file a report. Where is gaming in this transition period to streaming? What were the headline games announced at E3? What about Project Scarlet? Please enjoy.
So you had been to E3s before, right?
Yeah, this was something like, I think, my 7th or 8th at this point.
Just in a really broad way, like, was this year's different than previous years? How did it feel there on the floor, as it were?
Sure. It's been an interesting show over the past 10 or 15 years, I guess, however long it's been going, from a standpoint that it tends to ebb and flow, I think, more than any other show. We talk about that a lot during CES, you know, the changes that it's going through, how, you know, some of the larger companies have backed out and it's, you know, transitioned to smaller startups, things like that. But I haven't seen any other shows of this scale that have expanded and contracted the way E3 has. A few years ago, it went through this major transition where it just became essentially a series of meetings. I wasn't at those years, but I think they were kind of basically doing them out of hotel rooms. So all those really large over-the-top booths that, you know, companies like Nintendo and Microsoft have were pretty much non-existent. Obviously, it's come back in a pretty substantial way over the last few years. The primary difference this year from the standpoint of attendance – well, actually, let me back up a second. So the other major transition that it's gone through is it's turned into something that kind of skirts the line between a professional and consumer show. It, in some ways, the closest show that I attend to E3 is probably Comic-Con.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, I go to the New York one pretty much every year, and I've been to San Diego a handful of times, and it really has become kind of a fan fest, which is good from the standpoint that, you know, it's great that it's not closed off and that these, you know, huge mega fans get to be there at these events and, you know, interact with the companies, things like that, but it's kind of chaotic from the standpoint of actually attempting to get from point A to point B. You know, when you've got a meeting in South Hall and you're in North Hall, it can be kind of a nightmare. Everybody's walking around with their phones, but that's just sort of me being a seasoned person who's been through a lot of these and has a lot of complaints. They also tend to, more so than other consumer electronic events, although you will see this with Samsung and even Apple, they tend to pack the press conferences full of not only their own employees, but mega fans as well. So, you know, if you watch like the Square press conference, for example, there was nothing really major announced except for a handful of Final Fantasy remasters and a very lackluster looking Avengers game. But every single piece of minutia got a huge cheer. The biggest difference this year, however, between, say, this year and last year, was the absence of Sony. You really felt it in the North Hall. It was just one massive booth that wasn't there. There was just kind of a very large spatial difference. And then obviously the fact that Sony didn't have a press conference this year was big as well. So that was one of the big three gone. Nintendo over the past few years has really transitioned from having their own in-person press conference to something they call Nintendo Direct, which is basically a bunch of kind of pre-recorded vignettes and trailers that they tend to show, which works perfectly fine. You know, especially on years like this where there wasn't any new hardware to announce, it essentially has the same effect. But they were very much there in terms of presence. They had a huge booth and, you know, a handful of games. I spoke to one of their executives while I was there and got some hands-on time with a few of the new titles as well.
All the headlines, because I'm not super deep in the gaming space, but
sure,
all of the headlines were about this, you know, people talking about their coming streaming systems and subscription plays and things like that. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't actually that much tangible for you to actually see at E3, right? It was all about announcing stuff, but you can't actually see anything yet.
Yeah, I mean, E3 is a weird show. You know, I'm a hardware guy. In terms of what I do at TechCrunch and in terms of what I've done for the last several years, which means that you know, unless it's like a new VR headset or a new console, which, you know, those come out once every, what, like 8 or 10 years at this point, it seems like. There's not that sort of hands-on time. It's really just kind of games to play through. You're right insofar as all of these plays are essentially being announced for the second half of the year. I don't have any dates in front of me, but I think we're talking like October, November timeline for Stadia and xCloud, which is Microsoft's play.
Right.
This is a huge platform. This is, I think, still the biggest game show of the year, that don't quote me on that. So, this is really kind of the opportunity for them to get out in front of everything. And Google didn't have a booth or much of a presence at the show, but they did their big event the Friday before, which they were clearly kind of trying to take the wind out of everybody's sails. And it worked as far as Microsoft was concerned. Their press conference, which again was the only of the big three with an actual in-person press conference, was kind of strange in that it was a few dozen game trailers and then kind of squeezed into the last few minutes of the show. They announced Game Pass for PC. They talked about xCloud for about 2 or 3 sentences and then unveiled their Project Scarlet, which is their upcoming next generation console. And all of that unfolded in the space of probably under 5 minutes.
I think I read or something that you saw an xCloud demo. Was that a hands-on demo, or you just saw them demonstrate it?
Yeah, so Microsoft does this kind of fun thing. I don't know how well Los Angeles, but so that downtown area right next to the convention center, the freeway is right down there, and there's also the, God, what do they call it? Like the It's basically where they hold the Grammys, and the Staples Center, which is where the Lakers play. And then there's the Microsoft Theater, or Xbox Theater, I think it's called, which is where they do their events. So they do their big unveiling one day, and then they have it rented out for the next week. So you can essentially kind of walk into that area and get hands-on time. So we got a demo. I can't remember which game it was. I played a lot of games that week, but we got a demo of it. It was playing on Galaxy S10 devices with a little controller attached, and it seemed great. Lucas, who has a little more experience, he's actually played with Stadia, which I haven't at this point, said there was a little bit of lag, but honestly it wasn't enough that would really, I think, have a serious impact on your gameplay. Now the question is what sorts of underlying technologies they're using here, and how different that's going to be when there are a lot of people on the service. There's going to be a lot of constraints that they're going to have to deal with, and I suspect that we're really talking about 5G, I think, is going to be the thing that really that pushes these things forward.
Yeah, I think you, when you were speaking with some Microsoft reps, like, they're saying this push towards all cloud-based gaming is probably inevitable, but it's still probably also a ways off in Microsoft's calculation, at least.
Yeah, well, I mean, you would say that too if you were working on an $800 console, right? I think that's fair for a lot of reasons. One, I think people are still interested in buying this hardware, and the idea, given the amount of people that play games, the idea of going exclusively to cloud seems just completely nuts at this point. There's a lot of very kind of pragmatic technological barriers that need to be overcome to really get there.
So what degree are all the players, like, the actual studios and things like that, thinking that moving to the cloud and streaming is an inevitability as well?
The writing seems to be on the wall.
Are they talking about that? Like, when you're on the floor, is that like the sense that the industry is on the verge of a major transition?
I think so. Once you get all these big players in there, and the dominoes have fallen from the standpoint of every single other kind of major form of media. So, obviously, music streaming was the first to really get there. we've since gotten there with movies through, you know, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, and things like that. So it makes sense that at the very least that I think the writing is on the wall for subscription services, certainly. So, you know, Game Pass going forward, Apple's arcade going forward. And I think we're finally at a point where the technology for streaming is there to give people a reasonably good gaming experience, and getting somebody like somebody like Google and Microsoft in play here, I think is going to have a major effect. You know, we've been seeing, we've seen a lot of these companies over the past decade attempt this, we've seen a lot of startups attempt this, but when you're talking about companies with the infrastructure and the hosting services of Microsoft and Amazon, I think it's pretty clear that we're getting there, at least from the standpoint of having a certain reasonably large percentage of your gaming happening through the cloud.
I'm totally ignorant of this stuff, but I'm assuming Sony's probably going to do streaming as well at some point if they haven't already announced their plans.
Yeah, they do have a subscription offering, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're getting there as well, but they don't really, at least here in the States, they don't have the same kind of large scale infrastructure that a Google, Microsoft, or Amazon have. I mean, those are very much enterprise companies, so they have the back end to really handle this. So the question is whether they would, you know, build themselves or work with an Amazon or somebody else.
Ever wonder what might be the secret to how high growth companies like Brex and Nextdoor verify users' identities without a wall of form fields? Well, they use Cognito by BlockScore. Cognito is the identity verification service for the post-SNN world. Cognito's developer-friendly API instantly verifies users on your website with just a phone number using bank-grade identity verification. No asking for SSNs, addresses, strange questions about the color of your first car, or dare I say, a photo of your driver's license. Cognito's flexible scoring system helps you determine the relevance and quality of customer-submitted data in real time, effortlessly. You probably know that even adding one more field can kill your sign-up rate, so don't do it. Cognito is trusted by hundreds of businesses to onboard millions of customers seamlessly and safely. So if you need to trust your users are who they say they are, without playing 20 questions, visit CognitoHQ.com and tell them Brian sent you. That's CognitoHQ.com. Pantheon is the leading web ops platform. Pantheon powers more than 285,000 websites, including some of the most well-known brands like Coach, Lyft, IBM, and the ACLU. Pantheon's website portfolio management makes it simple to manage your websites, quickly iterate and optimize to deliver engaging digital experiences, and provide the highest level of security and uptime. Enjoy all of the richness of Drupal and WordPress without creating chaos in your organization. Pantheon consolidates management and governance across all your sites. Publish content and campaigns on your terms. Agile marketers use Pantheon to publish fresh content and quickly launch digital campaigns without the need for IT or engineering support. Empower your web team to develop, test, and launch sites in real time with Git-based workflows and feature branching. Visit pantheon.io/ride to learn how you can increase the efficiency of your web development team and achieve 156% returns on investment by switching to Pantheon. That's pantheon.io/ride.
And Nintendo says it's evaluating it, but then like even the publishers are kind of dipping their toe into this idea of subscriptions and services as well.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's important to make that distinction. I think I probably muddied the waters a little bit in my piece, and a lot of the Rams have as well, from the standpoint of, you know, when we're talking about Google Stadia, we're talking about a service that really kind of splits the difference here, that is both a streaming That's a streaming service with a subscription element, you know, I think something like $10 a month, but we don't know exactly how that's going to work right now. And one of the interesting things to bring up here is the fact that Ubisoft announced a service during their event, which I think is going to be like $15 a month, which is completely nuts. But that will work through Stadia. So, I mean, that's going to be kind of interesting to see where the line is drawn. But for publishers and developers, for Nintendo, this certainly, maybe not streaming, but subscription certainly makes a lot of sense because they've absolutely got the back catalog and the library to do it. And I think the idea of paying $10 a month to, you know, have access to every Mario game on your Switch makes a lot of sense.
Right. So that's what it is. There's two different channels here. There's the concept of I can game on any screen, like even a dumb screen, because the gaming is actually on the cloud. And then the second channel is this idea that as opposed to buying shrink wrap boxes, you pay a monthly fee and you get access to a certain number of games, right?
That's right. And another important reason is to draw this distinction, and this is something that we came out with that I don't think was highly reported until I talked to one of the Microsoft execs towards the end of the week, which is the fact that Microsoft is also drawing a line between xCloud for streaming service and game console streaming from the Xbox One. So that's going to be a similar service, but instead of having it happening on, you know, Microsoft machines on a server somewhere, you could actually potentially be anywhere in the world and stream a game directly from your Xbox to, you know, your iPhone, for example.
So, you know, the analogy we even mentioned, like, this is where all the industries seem to be going. So I guess it's an inevitability that we're going to eventually have the same problem that people are already worried about for video streaming services. Like, are you going to have to get six different subscriptions? But like you, I think in one of somebody's piece, they pointed out that, like, it's an even bigger issue on the gaming front. It's not just, well, you know, I want to watch Friends, but Friends is on that service over there. Mm-hmm. Like, if you've invested time in a game, like, you've had progress in that game that you've invested in. You might have bought actual microtransactions. Yeah. And stuff. So, like, if you have to move between different platforms, like, it's different than I can't access a movie. It's like, we're getting into weird questions of ownership here.
Yeah, I talked about that in the piece. I think it even goes beyond that. I mean, Friends is a good example because you'll notice that there's an easy story that a lot of sites do. I'm not saying this disparaging. Like, I totally get why people do this, but you'll see that story come out once a month from a lot of different entertainment and tech sites. Here's all of the movies and shows that are leaving Netflix. And that's something that we're going to have to grapple with here, right? Publishing deals lapse and companies are only interested in having things for a certain amount of time. You know, maybe there's like a sequel to a game that's coming out. You know, say there's like a new Assassin's Creed coming out. So Game Pass wants to get access to all the Assassin's Creed. But yeah, the question is, if you've invested a lot of money and then it goes away from the service, what happens, which is something that I put to these Game Pass executives. And essentially what they told me was that people who subscribe to their service will get a discount to purchase the game, which makes sense from their standpoint in that I don't think they want game ownership to go away in the same way that record labels don't want downloads to go away, right? Like, in an ideal world for them, you're listening to these things on Spotify, and if you really love them, you're gonna purchase them. But you know, maybe games are similar to albums in that way, in that you'll go back and listen to an album numerous times. But they're very different from Netflix in the way that for most of us, you know, we watch a movie and we're done with that movie, at least for some time. You know, if you're over the age of 12, you're probably not watching the same movie week in and week out.
Right. Although that's an argument for being able to own own kids' movies, at least. Yeah. So, like you said, you're more of a hardware guy. So, based on the limited details that were released, what did you think of Project Scarlet?
The specs are impressive. I'm going to assume that in a couple years we're going to be at 8K, but it's always hard to say with sets. You know, I was at CES this year and we saw like several 8K screens, but that seems like a number of years off. Too early to say. You know, obviously, like I've always been. My dirty secret is I'm not much of a gamer myself either, but I've always been, you know, titles over hardware when it comes to most of these things. So I think when we're at a point where the only thing that's been announced so far is a Halo sequel, it's way too early to say. And I think that the consensus is essentially that Microsoft's kind of, certainly Sony had a leg up in this last generation. So with the PS4, so, you know, it certainly makes sense that Microsoft's trying to get out ahead of this thing.
Well, then what were some of the game specific highlights for you? This is an area I know absolutely nothing about. what were the big hits or the announcements that for games that got people's heads turned?
There were a lot of them for different reasons. I mean, you know, that, Avengers was a weird one. Always a bad sign. Like that was going to be Ubisoft's biggest title of the event, and it's always a really bad sign when you don't see any actual gameplay. And I think it's scheduled to come out, I think, later this year. So that's always kind of a rough sign. I spent some time at the Nintendo booth, which I mentioned before. So I'm old, so the one that kind of really excited me was the Link's Awakening reissue, which is essentially it was the first Zelda title for Game Boy. They're doing a complete reissue, and it looks really terrific for the Switch. So that should be coming out toward the end of the year. The Cyberpunk 2077 got a standing ovation, mostly because Keanu came out on stage. Right. That's very exciting for people. That looks very cool. The Watch Dogs trailer was really impressive. I think that took a lot of people by surprise, the ability to play as an insane number of characters was a big hit at the event.
What is Guiji?
Well, obviously, Guiji is a goo-based version of Luigi that appears to so there's a new Luigi's Mansion game. I think it's a third Luigi's Mansion that's coming out, which is Luigi in a haunted house. We spent time playing it. It's a lot of fun, as just about every Mario tour is and Mario game is. And the big innovation here is a gelatinous version of Luigi that appears to either emanate from, I can't say for sure whether it's his weird Ghostbusters vacuum or actually from inside of Luigi. So there's a lot to unpack there, but it's like if you took a Luigi shaped Jello mold and made green Jello out of it, it would look like Luigi, and he's able to kind of to get to things and do things that regular man Luigi is not able to.
That sounds like something that I need to actually see the images of to even have a chance of grokking.
But okay. I sort of sounds like it's exactly like sounds like it's it's like Secret of the Ooze meets Luigi. Does that paint a picture?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. That's how you have to do it. Like that Hollywood thing of it's like speed. It's like Die Hard, but you know, in a kindergarten class or something. You know.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for gamefully trying to describe that, but also wrapping up E3 for us, Brian.
No problem.